Tejasvinavaditamashtamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarikaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavatam verse reference Srimad Bhagavatam 2:6 40-41
The personality of Godhead is pure, being free from all contaminations of material tinges. He is the absolute truth and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is all-pervading without beginning or end and without rival. O Narada, O great sage, the great thinkers can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Otherwise, by untenable arguments, all is distorted and the Lord disappears from our sight. Right. So untenable means that it's mixed with karma and jnana. That's where the untenable comes in. So as soon as that karma or jnana is there, then the Lord disappears. Because why? We see here he's free from all material contaminations. So if you want to know him, then you have to be functioning on that platform. Right? He is the absolute full, perfect knowledge, right? So if we're using imperfect knowledge, without a rival, and then we're putting something else, like in this case, Pradhan or something is the rival. And he's completely free from all material hankerings. Right. And then when one shelters in disturbed conditions of the senses, one can know him. So the senses, it's the application of the senses in which we try to enjoy separately from Krishna. Right? Because the senses are being engaged in devotional service. And that's why it's called devotional service, because the senses are engaged. But when we engage the senses, the mechanics of the senses, without it being service to Krishna, that's called sense gratification. Does that make sense? Yes.
Right, sense gratification is a concept that in the beginning is just a concept.
Yes.
So where does this concept come from? Where can we get this concept from?
Because when you see your... engaging the senses, and that will give a particular experience itself. Right? Then but the whole idea is that these senses are being engaged, they're in the Lord's service. So in that, then there's so much greater. You know, it's just like, let's say, the mechanics of cooking. You know, it'll have a certain taste for those who like to cook. But now if you're cooking for someone in particular, or, you know, a group of persons that you have a relationship with, that's the real taste.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but it's not that the cooking process itself, there's not some taste in the technique and, you know, accomplishment and, you know, using the intelligence and creating variety. There's all those flavors there. But those aren't actually the main flavor. The main flavor is cooking for someone, you know, that you appreciate. Right? So, spiritual means cooking for someone who you appreciate, means Krishna. Material means cooking without that. It's just for the taste of cooking. So nothing's being accomplished. That's why it says Shrama Avi Kevalam. Nothing's getting done. Because the nature of the soul is a relationship with the Supreme. So if we're engaging the senses without a relationship to the Supreme, it's a waste of time because it's not accomplishing anything. Does that make sense? We've all, because that's what we do, so therefore we relate to that. You know, it's like a hobby. Right? People have hobbies and they get into their hobbies, but technically hobbies don't accomplish anything. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But if that's a profession, now it accomplishes something.
Then these people, the materialists, they can argue that they do accomplish, they get a taste, material rust, they experience.
Yes, that's there, but then the point is how much is that? We're not saying that there's not a taste in the engagement of the senses and the sense objects. We're saying that that's not the actual real taste for the soul. The soul's taste is a relationship between themselves and the Lord being expressed through the senses. Right? And so, therefore, it's so much greater. It's unlimitedly greater. Because then you're dealing with the complete whole. Now, when we deal with the senses, there's something there, but it's only when there's something when we notice it. Right? That we can say that it's there. Otherwise, we eat every day, but then one day you notice something. That's the part where we'll say, now this is good. Otherwise, it's just something that you go through. Right? So in other words, we have senses. Senses are engaged. Right? But that moment that we get, it only has, in a partial way, a connection with, and partial meaning because of our realization and everything. It's connected with the Lord because He's the potency that's making it work. That what we notice, that's Krishna. The taste in it or something unique about it or the beauty of like this. Right? And so it's we're perceiving the Lord, but because it's not done in devotion, it can only be reciprocated on the mechanical platform. But it is the Lord, so that's why we find a taste in it. But that taste is still Krishna. Now when the soul is then turned towards Krishna is favorable and in a relationship, then it can be reciprocated on that platform of relationship. Otherwise it's just mechanics. Does that make sense? You know, that's all it is. There's no interaction. Does that make sense? So that's the difference, is that we're people. There's this, you know, because of the material concept is that the things themselves are the enjoyable, right? And we've just adjusted to that. Just like, let's say, you know, the example of the pig. It eats stool. Now most living entities won't consider that a good thing. But the pigs have adjusted to it. Right? And within their field, then they'll consider something as better stool than others. Right? So then that's that's what's happened in the material world, is that since no one is experiencing the engagement of the senses in connection with the Lord in devotion, then just the experience of engaging the senses is all anybody has to work with. So within that, then they make categories, a hierarchy. And then people try to find different ways to get some taste out of it. Let's say we even take it back further, you know, just to bring it and make it a little bit more, you know, blatant. Okay, someone goes into the kitchen, they like cutting vegetables. But once they cut the vegetables, then they just throw them away. They don't cook, they don't eat, they don't anything. But they got an experience from cutting the vegetables. Right? So they just do, and it's fun like that. But then someone comes along and shows, hey, you get in here and do that, you know, like the chefs do, and they go, you know, so quickly, you know, like that. That gives more of a taste, you know? And so like that. And so then people get together, and they're the speed vegetable cutting club. So they get together and do all that. And then what vegetables, you know, give the best experience to cut and like that. And, you know, these others are short. Let's say you have a stick of celery, you know, it's so long, so you really get that, you know, you can really... You know what I'm saying? And then somebody figures out, hey, if we take other vegetables and cut them in half so they sit flat, then we can line them up, you know? And then, you know, and then you get the Guinness Book of World Records for the how many meters of potatoes that they cut, you know, in how many seconds and, you know, stuff like this. And so it all goes on. But after they do that, all of it's all thrown away. No one ever eats it, uses it for anything else. It's just for that. Understand? Now, because we have a value that there's a higher purpose in the whole, you know, preparation of cooking, you know, when we're engaging. So then we'll say this is a real waste. You understand? So because we don't necessarily have that taste or understanding of that, unless it's done in connection with the soul and God, that that's the real thing. And if you're only engaging the senses, it's a waste. We say, no, but we're getting something from it. You know, just like they're cutting the potatoes and getting something from it. You understand? So that's what's happened, is that the real thing it's for is not being used. And so a whole thing is just being made about that. So you go to, let's say, a potato cutting resort, you know, so they have so many, everyone gets their own counters, and this is a 5-star, you know, resort, because everyone gets those, very, very fat, you know, like 8 millimeters or 10 millimeter thick laminated wood, you know, counters on which they can cut their vegetables. And this place has ceramic knives, or specializes in those really high grade Japanese knives, or, you know, and then, you know, they have places where some people like using the big knives, some people like using the small knives, or, you understand? So that's what happens. That's what gets all the variety that goes on there, and then everything that goes with it. So you have your apron, you have your, you know, this or that, or you're new at it, so you're enthusiastic, so you have your finger guard, you know, when you cut your vegetables, so, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. And, you know, the sound that they get from it, and you know, does that make sense? So, but it's never used, so therefore it's just a waste of time. No matter how sophisticated you get, no matter how quickly you get, you can cut the potatoes in, you know, 0.5 millimeter thick slices, you know, consistently or something. You know, it doesn't matter. It's still a waste of time. You know, and then someone else figured out, okay, you can cut the potatoes one way, and then you can cut them the other way. You know, and that you double your pleasure out of one potato, you know, like that. And so in this way, that's what's going on in the material world, because it is an experience from engaging the senses, but that's not actually the point. That's the medium that's being used. So since Krishna is all pleasure, he is all rasa, anything that happens, then there's some pleasure and rasa in it. So therefore and all these aspects of the Lord, so the jnana and kriya shaktis, there's some pleasure there, but its only actual purpose is serving the icha shakti of the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's just being mistaken here. So we take it, we're getting something from that. That's one thing. And then devotional service means we're not getting that. You know what I'm saying? So then what happens? That's the difficulty, is that it's either, you know, we're just being practical and that's the way it works, or, you know, we give up everything and don't engage the senses at all. So karma or jnana. You understand? So we think bhakti means jnana, and, you know, practical life means karma. And so then we're missing that. No, it's engaging the senses. That's why in the Vedic culture you have all that engagement of the senses. But it's all in connection with the Lord. That's why the rules are there. Because the rules are there is you don't get distracted. You engage the senses, but in connection with the Lord. And so what will distract the senses, and distract the mind in engaging the senses, that's not within within your duty. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like you go out golfing when you should be at work. It distracts from what you're actually supposed to be doing. And so because you don't go to work, you don't get paid. You don't get paid, you can't take care of the family. You know what I'm saying? So rules are there.
The elephant is the hook that sanctification is going to give something.
Yes, that's the idea. That's what we've had since time immemorial. Yes. See, why would we have that?
We are looking for happiness or something.
Yes, but why would we, even though we engage the senses and the sense objects without Krishna, and we're never ever getting satisfied, why would we continue?
Because it's an eternal principle.
That's right. Because the soul is Sat Chit and Ananda. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they make the mistake of Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. That the material world is eternal, and you can gain happiness because that's their nature. Because when we said a moment, you remember the moment of what we consider enjoyment. Everything else we forget. You know what I'm saying? Like if you look back on your life, you know, you'll just remember moments like that. You may say no, but there's moments I remember that weren't good or bad or like this. But generally then they'll fit into fearing. Because that's also a taste. Eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. Or defending like this. So it may not be positive, but it's, you know, hence scary movies. Right? Because it just increases fearing. Is that... So that's why we continue. So until we get that faith that it's a, that the, how do you say, that the devotional application of knowledge, activities, you know, results, the experiences, that is actually, that's the higher principle, that's the natural principle, then we continue on the lower. That's why by having good association means someone who's more advanced so that we get that understanding. We get exposure to that. You know, in a practical way. Right? While if we associate with materialists, what's the problem? You can say, no, but I have to get work done or this or that. But association means you value what's going on in the interaction. But if you're just engaging but without that value, you know, you go to work, do your work, come back, get paid. Then that's not association. But you like being there with those people, or like hanging out, or like the concept. Then that's association. So, being associated with materialists then increases the idea that, yes, I can enjoy in the material world. You know, so that's why it's so important that when something fails, means people are doing whatever they're doing. And they're not getting a taste from it. Someone comes up with something new, right? That's what the fads are about. Is they found a new way to cut the things. You know what I'm saying? You know, instead of starting from the end to end, they go from side to side. Like that. Because if you go side to side, and then you... Okay, we've been just going end to end. Right? And cutting it like that. And so... You know, it gives a taste, but then someone figured out after going end to end, we can go then cut it from side to side and it increases it. But in doing it, there's a difficulty in cutting it from side to side because they tend to fall over and everything. Right? But now someone figured out, now what if you cut side to side first? Then when you hold the potato and cut end to end, it doesn't fall over so easily. So it increases the height. So now that's the new rage. You know, and they'll give a name to it, it'll have some different things, you know, your knife blade will be purple now instead of, you know, like that. And
a new life.
Yes, a new life. So that's the whole thing, is that when there's hope that sense gratification can work, then everyone becomes inspired again. Because otherwise they become jaded. You know, it's not working. It doesn't work. So someone comes up with something new. So the modes of nature are there because you have to stay here, right? And the reason we're staying here is because we like to be here. So then Maya will now and again give that little bit of hope. But it doesn't need much. It just needs a moment, and we're good for a long time. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that as long as there's been an experience of something great, you know, so the person who's a pessimist, they never experienced anything nice, they don't have a good thing, but then someone can show them that, oh, you know, it can be nice. It gives a whole new, you know, you change their vision. You know, these are major concepts and positions in themes within the materialistic society. You know, so now there's new hope or that, or like that, if someone shows them, you know, a path of gyan, you know, become renounced or meditate or that, it opens up a whole new, because now I can enjoy again. So that's the thing, is that that's why it always says, whatever it is, it always say, what do you call it? It's temporary and it's full of misery. Anytime you're dealing with that, the idea of enjoying the material world, it'll always say that. And then it'll always say, it's a waste of time. Right? So we just keep hearing this, and then we get examples of that. We see how these great personalities are happy in devotional service, and it goes on. And it's like that moment. Then we have that moment. Now, where is the moment? In which phase of time? No, when I experience it, it's in the present. And then the moment, then it's past. Then I spend my whole time thinking about the past, hoping I'll get it in the future. So I'm just in passion and ignorance. Right? Over that inspiring moment. Now, the spiritual world means that present moment, that's all there is. Meaning, that's the eternal position. You're always in that moment. So that feeling of how it's great and I could do this forever, that's what's going on in the spiritual world. That's why I say they're never satisfied, because it's so perfect. They can just keep doing it. On the material world, you keep doing something, it gets old and you stop doing it. But there, it gets newer and newer, fresher and fresher. So you're satisfied being in that position of being always on that platform. So that's what we call the spiritual platform. That's Vaishnava liberation. But the point is it's not about the liberation, it's about the service being done in that. That gives even more. So association is what's really, really important in all this. Because without association, then we don't know that there's something higher. We don't keep moving forward. So that's why no matter what the position, whether it's just in a jnana sukriti, and then coming to the position of faith, taking up the process, becoming fixed in the process, you know, being invited, being in rag, being in bhava, it's all about association. And since we're dealing in prema as an eternal principle, it's still about association. So that is the core point. Now, within association, what you're doing is hearing, chanting, and remembering about the Lord. Right? So that's the core engagement. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It mentions that because of the untenable arguments, the Lord disappears from the site.
Because of the?
Untenable
arguments, yeah.
The Lord disappears from the site. But can you not say that at least this is the step one wherein the Lord started to reciprocate?
When there's untenable arguments?
Lord disappears. At least he appears and he disappears. So it's something very positive. And then
it's positive he disappears, but the problem is those who, let's say the Shankyites, that's all they do is untenable arguments. So it's just like the Lord reciprocates with every living entity as they interact with him. So as they have their untenable arguments, then, you know, someone else has their sense gratification. So he's not visible to anyone. So it's not that that's a positive thing. Positive is Narad Muni, you know, as his birth as a maidservant is out wandering, and then he hears the Lord's voice. Then he disappears, and then he spends his life trying to find that voice again, that experience. Now that's another thing, but that's because of the undisturbed conditions of the senses, you know, how you say, having the proper knowledge, all these kind of things like that. So the point is, from materialism, other than creating the window of opportunity that you're totally frustrated with the material world, and if you actually are sincere that you want to know what's the real answer and you come in contact with the devotees, hearing what they have to say, seeing what they do, you take that up. Then you can say, then it has a benefit. But other than that window, then there's no benefit to the material world. It's just, its only benefit is you might think, well, is there something else?
Then can you say that for the devotees, when the devotee comes to the platform of prema, only then he does not have doubt regarding any of the scriptural questions, but then below prema he may have
doubt. Okay, so could we have doubt about the scriptural things below prema, so at only prema we would have it? Well, what we see when you're dealing with Kanista Madhyam and Uttama in the, you know, in advancement, how one's fixed in, you know, devotional service, then the neophyte position is the neophyte, right? The Madhyama position is in its, and the Uttama position means bhava on up, right? So it's just like Anishta Bhajana Kriya is a neophyte, Anishta Bhajana Kriya is a Madhyama. So, how you say, Anishta, they say, Bhava is Bhava, and Nishta Bhava is Prema. So, but when we talk about faith in the scriptures, then you have someone who just gains that someone who has some and who's fixed it. So the Madhyama means that they're fixed in it. That's generally that where you see Uttama faith in scripture from the Madhyama. And as it goes, it just gets more. So from the Madhyama platform, you can have that unflinching faith in scriptures, where you'll take it, whatever the scripture says is correct, even if you can't understand it or relate to it. The neophyte, then they'll have those two stages of not of having very minimal faith, so any little thing can throw it off. To those who are, you know, nicely situated, but now and again things are, they just can't relate to it. But the Madhyama means they're fixed. So it's a different thing. Adhikarana 5, the rejection of remaining philosophies. So then we've dealt with the Mimamsa, we've dealt with the Shankhya, and we've dealt with Yoga. Right? So now, you know, then we have a few more left. Shishta Pari Graha Vikaranam. Sutra reference 2.1.12. Adhikarana Prakashika. The Adhikarana herein strengthens the fact that defeat of Shankhya and Yoga actually imply the defeat of other philosophies as well. Because that's why they're considered as the hierarchy of the philosophies. Nonetheless, the Sutrakar, for the purpose of clarification about the multiple opinions on the theory of particles advertised by other non-theistic schools of thought, has briefed the subject in the current Adhikarana. It is dealt discreetly from every approach, in depth in the next pada. Verses 2:11 through 17.
Vedanta
Sutra. Vedanta Sutra. Sorry? Vedanta Sutra. Why, what did I say?
You said verses.
Yeah, but I was meaning Vedanta Sutra verses. But yeah, Vedanta is also verses. Therein, the Sutrakar established that the particles are eternal with parts. The initial action in the particles is caused by Brahman alone, and neither by the karmas of the Jivatman nor karmas within the particle. That's an important part, because that's, if Pradhan is the cause of things, as these philosophies are saying, then it has its independent nature, but it's coming from the Lord. Brahman is pervading it, that's why it holds together. Otherwise, you have the particle, what's it going to do? Nothing. Why will they come together? Because Brahman enters it. Therefore, the attractive feature between Brahman, then the atoms can stick together. Right? Then that you can make into things. Right? So if they don't stick together, then you can't get anything like that. So it's not that, and it's not the jivas themselves that make it stick together. No, the jivas are in situations in which they're there. They're already stuck together. Right? It's not that when you're asleep in the morning in your bed, the rest of the world doesn't exist. And then as you wake up, then your bedroom is there. And as you, you know, go to the bathroom, then the bathroom manifests. But then as you close the door, it disappears like that. That'd be an interesting, you know. Yeah, yeah. You know. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Very interesting, you know. Especially if someone else was in the bathroom.
This is the Buddhist philosophy, principle of uncertainty.
The principle of uncertainty. Yeah. Okay, so. Yes, so this whole point is that it has to be very clear, is that Brahman is what's pervading, Brahman is what's the working principle that makes everything function. Then we can take part in that by our karma. Right? The train's already there. You can get on it because you want to go to that place. But even if you don't get on it, the train's still there going to that place. Right? So some days a few people are on the train, some days it's packed. You know? Or you can say packed, more packed, and most packed. You know, like that. it's packed, but then when they're in between, that's more packed, and when they're on the roof, then that's most packed. The Adhikarana boldly concludes in Vedanta Sutra 2217, Apari Grahach Chatyantam Ana Peksha, by declaring that because the particle theory as the cause of the universe is not accepted by the sages, it should be completely ignored. Thus, Brahman is the Upadana, material cause, since he is the ingredient, the basic building particles for the creation. Right? So, they're saying is that the particles themselves create everything. But then if the particles can do that, things made out of the particles would have the same thing, because you see the cause and the effect. So that means your pile of bricks, you could come back one day and it's been made into a house or something, just spontaneously. Like that. So, which would be good. It's just how long you have to wait. You know? So you don't know if here atomic time means very small and quick, or atomic time means very long and it's going to take forever. So therefore, if they work out the time, then you know the great grandfather then buys the pile of bricks, but he's living in the house that his great grandfather. So every generation buys a pile of bricks and sticks it out there on an empty lot, and then their great grandchild, then they have a house, you know, because it'll spontaneously manifest. Okay, this was earlier approved by the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 1426. Atma Kriche Parinamat. That Brahman is the ingredient of creation, because he transformed himself into the world via his shaktis. Right? So this always has to be seen. Is that Krishna, through his shaktis, that's how he's transformed. He is everything, because he's conscious of it. It may be his energies, but he's conscious of it. Right? If he wants to interact based on relationship like that, then he by yoga maya, then he acts in a capacity that he's not being conscious of what's going to happen. Does that make sense? So he can consciously be unconscious of what's going to happen. Like, you know, the example of, can God, you know, make a mountain that he can't lift? He can do that, and then he can lift it. So the point is, he can know. So through that, he knows everything, down to what's happening on the atomic level. Because he and his energies are non-different. So as Sarvajna, he knows everything. But as Mugdhata, then he engages in pastimes. Yes?
Can we say that in his different features as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, he's conscious of different shaktis?
Yes. Yes. I mean, yes, because you'll see in Brahman and Paramatma, he'll be specifically focusing on the jnana and kriya shaktis, you know, and everything goes with that. In other words, the situations that are there and the mechanical applications and mechanical results that you can get. Right? But you can see is that's not where the taste is. The taste is in interacting on the basis of that devotion. So that's why it's the same with us. If the cause is in the effect, we also, by interacting with the situation and creating, you know, transforming energies, the taste that's gotten there, that's not actually that special. Right? So the normal thing would be, we try it, we see it doesn't work. And then we know that Krishna consciousness, that we take that up. But the problem is because we want it to work, therefore as long as we want it to work, then Maya creates that illusion that it can work and moves us around to 8,400,000 species so that we don't get bored. Because otherwise you should get bored after, you know, how long can you do the same thing without any relationship, without any, you know, as such, without any relationship, without any interaction. You know, you can't necessarily, you know, depending on what it is, some things are shorter, some things longer. But even that's dependent upon your value of it. Right? Like, have we ever seen a happy zombie? No, they always have this weird look on their face because they're doing things but getting no taste from it. So that's the problem. Like if somebody's just doing their work without paying any attention or no experience, no, we call them a zombie. Huh? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that that won't work. Now Balaram, he is working within controlling these two Shaktis and engaging them, but why is he doing it? As service to Krishna. So therefore, that's where the taste is. So he's engaging them as God, but he's doing that to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So in the same way as we're coming from that Shakti that engages things. It's not the situational Shakti. We come from the engagement Shakti, right? The Chit Shakti. And so therefore, then Chit here meaning Sat Chit and Ananda. Not Chit meaning Sarup, the whole thing. Because yes, everything comes from Sarup. So here we're from there. So we're on the edge there. So then what is the difference there? The edge between the situation being spiritual, the situation not being spiritual. So we can see both. Does that make sense? So that's why it's, you know, it's just like everybody else is up in the front and engaging. And so they're happy, but we're sitting at the very back, and we can either look forward and enjoy what's going on there or look out the back window. Does that make sense? But looking out the back window is situational. It's actually not interactive. So we're interacting with the situation, but it's not actually producing anything for the real purpose. Does that make sense? So when we see Sandini as something we can enjoy, that brings us here. When we see Sandini as something that's engaged in the Lord's service, then we're there. Does that make sense?
And the other choice.
Yeah, that means your choice is one or the other. You don't have a third option. We try to create a third option by these voidist and, you know, philosophies that you have this and then we don't know about that, so we create something in between. Right? And so if it's Vedic, the impersonal, it's still called that because it is on the spiritual side, but it's not the actual full understanding of that. The full understanding of that is Bhagavan in his relationship with the devotees in devotion. Otherwise, just the situation, the Sandini aspect that is there. It is that, but it's only the situation of that. Then there's what goes on in that. Does that make sense? So we're used to things going on in this. And so then the natural thing is this, you know, we like to engage in activities and results and experiences within this. But it doesn't give any satisfaction, so we're told that you can do that on the spiritual platform and get the experience in that. Then we'll take it. But when we have a concept that since this has all these activities and forms and everything, and it gives us trouble and we're miserable, that must not have any of that in it. It doesn't have any material. But it doesn't, you know, so in other words, for the impersonals to say there's nothing material there, they don't have then they don't actually run into an obstacle of becoming liberated. Because they see everything as Brahman, it can have, the situation can have variety, but it's just existence. They don't really know about Chit and Ananda. They just exist within existence. Right? While the Mayavadis will say there is no existence. So they're Buddhists. Like that. Vedic, based on Vedic literature and, you know, for the philosophy and the culture, but it's still Buddhist as a philosophy. So.
Can you say that because the jiva has an experience of this and no experience of that, that is the reason why he keeps himself entangled in this.
the jiva, because he has no experience of that, he keeps going after this. The point is that it's inherently natural for the jiva to be engaged in that. Like that. So it's not, it has to be seen, it can't be used as an excuse. You know, that we're here and this is all we know, we don't know about that, so how can you put so much pressure that we have to get into that? You know, why did God make us this way? Why couldn't he have made us? Like, no, that's not how it works. You know, somehow we're not complaining about, you know, how God made $1 million when somebody comes along and gives us, you know. So we have to see is that's the inherent nature. So when we come in contact with it, then that should be naturally what we take up. Just like, let's say, a child was born but never taken care of by a mother. So they have no experience of that. But if they come in contact with a mother figure, then that relationship naturally develops. Yeah, so that's the way it is with Jesus. So that we have no experience, but it's natural for the soul. Therefore, when we get the experience by coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, it becomes very natural to take it up.
We discussed Sankhya in yoga. Now we're going back to Vaisheshika?
It appears so. Because if you defeat these two, you know, it's like you defeat karma, you technically defeated all these others. But there's some major aspects of how they approach in Sankhya and yoga. So Sankhya, you know, it'll be, you can say in one sense Sankhya is the basis of yoga. So by dealing with Sankhya, but, you know, and bringing in elements of yoga that are important, then you deal with that. Now having dealt with that, then you go down to what's functioning on lower than that. That'll be the Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Because Vaisheshika is based on Nyaya, so if you defeat the higher one, the lower ones aren't included. But, or if you get rid of the basis in Nyaya, then the higher one doesn't need it. You know, so like that. So he's starting, you know, with the top and going down. Because if you catch that, then it, because the other ones you may get into it, but then you can't see it in the bigger sense. Well, if you start with the bigger sense, then the details coming down into it are easier.
Actually, in this particular adhikarana, we find that it has only one sutra. And as I mentioned over here, that it's simply a brief mention of the Vaisheshika yoga practices, which will be dealt with in the second part completely. And after this, we'll be dealing with the Nyaya completely. So, this is just simply an introduction.
Yeah, but the point is that's how things work. It always works in that format that, like you see, Rupa Goswami, Nectar Devotion, he'll give the, in the first five chapters, he'll explain the concept of bhakti. You know, and the concept and different major sections of the bhakti. Then we see, from the sixth chapter, then he'll give what is vaidhi, all the rules and all that. That'll be the second list. The first one is that, you know, you have vaidhi sadhana, and you have, you have sadhana bhakti, you have vaidhi, you have rag, and you have prema. Right? Bhava bhakti and prema. Right? So that you know that list. Then he'll give the details of what are in that chapter. Then he'll spend the next chapters getting into details of what's within each of the 64 items. So generally, presentations are always in these three levels. You'll get, like many times, especially in the Apara Vidya, they'll open a chapter or a section with a shloka that gives the summary of all the things in all that. But it won't define it at all. They'll just say what's there. Right? Then, after that, then they'll start to give what's the major positions, then they'll get into the details. So it's always starting from the top and going down. So even in the presentation, it's always like that. Summary of Adhikarana 5. The contrary views made by the Smritis of Sankhya and Yoga and their logical arguments have been refuted. The following question is important for them, the other philosophers, because if Brahman is a material cause, their smritis become useless. Now the views of Kanada and others, along with their arguments, will be refuted. Right? Because you have that any of these six schools, these are the main, you can say, genres of philosophy. Within that, you may have various branches and details and, you know, combinations and this and that. Does that make sense? You know, so. Vishaya. Once we understand the Vedic view that the Supreme Brahman is both the efficient and material cause of creation, and that his multifarious potencies, internal and external, are responsible for the creation, we are faced with a surprising conclusion that all other philosophies, religions, and theories of the creation are incorrect, because they all ascribe some degree of independent creative power and intelligence to dull inert matter. Right? Life comes from matter. Right? This view is surprising because many of these philosophies are ostensibly religious or spiritual. Yet, directly or indirectly, they promote the atheistic view that the personal intelligence, will, and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not required to explain the creation. Right? So for whatever reason, like that, is that they just can't understand the Supreme. Without bhakti, you can't understand. Right? Therefore, all such illusory theories, having been refuted by the clear arguments of Vedanta Sutra, are rejected. Shamshaya, so the doubt comes up. Should Brahman be rejected as the material cause by these philosophers? Purvapaksha, Brahman as the material cause should be rejected, since everything arises from combination of two, three, and more very small particles, and thus Brahman is unsuitable as the material cause because Brahman is all-pervading. Because you're saying is that things are made up of here, of a finite amount of particles. And Brahman being unlimited, how would that apply? You see, is they're using that same faulty kind of logic that there, you, means you're trying to see, when you see cause and effect, there's what's common, so therefore there's cause, but at the same time there's difference, so there's effect. But there has to be a common point because it's expanding from that, so you can't say it's made out of the same, it has the same element, you know, principles. But at the same time, as if it's not different, then why say it's an effect? Right? Yes.
So they always pick up where is the difference, and then they take it as a proof.
Yes, they misapply. They use one for the other. Where we should be applying the difference, they're trying to show, well, that doesn't prove the same. Right? You know what I'm saying? And then where it's the same, then they're showing, no, but you have to, you know, like that. So it's and why would that happen? Why would we reverse?
Mode of ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Like that. Because the basis is ignorance of our relationship with the Lord. Mm-hmm. So that ignorance is there before one's under the modes of nature. So that's why, as long as the Karna Sharir is there, that is ignorance. Right? Then within ignorance, then you have three varieties, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? So the whole, why would that be is because you have, you know, pure knowledge of the spiritual world and you have ignorance of the material world. But since it's a reflection, right? Because you're dealing with jivas and the Lord, so the cause and the effect are going, you can see the cause and the effect. So you can see the cause of the Supreme Lord in the effect of the material world. Right? So through that, then you can understand and see the Supreme and your relationship with the Supreme, no matter what situation you're in. So that's the advantage in the Vaishnava philosophy, is that all these things, spiritual and material, become very easy. So karma and jnana become very easy for the devotee, because he sees everything in connection with Krishna, and he sees all work in connection with Krishna. Like, what's the problem in doing good work consistently? Is my attachment and a repulsion, you know, wax and wane. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I'm attached, I work more. When I'm repulsed, I work less. Mm-hmm. But if it's duty, then I'm steady. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, I have to have detachment. Now, in the impersonal detachment, you're going to be detached, but you're going to do nothing. So it's still not going to be progressive. So only in bhakti can you be detached and be progressive. You'll perform the activity. seven sense. At the same time, as I'm detached, doesn't mean I don't engage, because I see everything connected to the Lord. So bhakti is the perfect philosophy. All the others are taking aspects, and they're okay in their own area, but the problem is they try to extend it to make it complete. And it's just like, okay, we go into a kitchen and there's knives. So now are knives bogus? As far as the kitchen goes. No, they're perfectly normal. But now if I say the whole cooking process and everything is just knives, I don't need any other utensil, now it becomes bogus. But their technique on how to use the knife, you don't have to have another explanation. So everybody, all, you know, Vaishnavas, everybody, all of the schools will quote how to use a knife if they include knives. Now another one includes a knife and a grater, so they don't have to, you know, do a further exposition on knives, but they will give all the details on graters. You understand? So like that, then that's what they're doing. They're trying to make a complete philosophy out of something that's only part of a complete philosophy. So that's why it gets bogus. That's where the mode of ignorance comes in. Is that they have to somehow or another turn things around, because that's the only way it seems to work for them. And what works is staying here in the material world. And they're good at it. So we have to give them that credit. At least they're successful in that way. So Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva addresses the above as follows. Sutta 2.1.12. Etena shishta parigraha api vyakyata. Etena, by this, shishta, the remaining systems, apari graha, not accepted by the Vedas. Also, vyakyata, also are refuted. By the refutation of Shankya and Yoga, the remaining philosophies which do not accept the Vedas are refuted. Right, so any philosophy that doesn't accept the Vedas and says the conclusion of the Vedas that is opposing to their philosophy, therefore it shouldn't stand, then all of those are refuted. Sutta Prakashika. So those who accept the Vedas and in line with what they know, and if they don't understand it, they still continue with that appreciation, then those schools, they're not defeated. Right? You don't have to defeat those schools. Sutta Prakashika. Since there is no such rule as tiny particles giving rise to something huge, these philosophies are refuted based on the same foundation as seen earlier. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. Shishta means those remaining. Apari graha means those who do not accept the Vedic actions. The compound is karma dharya. By refuting Shankya and Yoga, which contradict the Vedas, it should be understood that the philosophies of Kanada, Akshapada, Gotama, and others, those remaining, are refuted, since the reasons for rejecting them are the same. So they're those schools that are left, because we've already dealt with karma before, then we come down to Shankya and Yoga, and now we're going down further. Right? Because what's the difference? Karma accepts all the Vedic verses. They may have a misinterpretation of it, but they accept them all, as does the Shankara Vedanta. They accept the Veda. But here you see in these four schools, then they only accept part of the Veda that supports what they do. And the other parts, they if they just ignored them, that's another thing. But when you discuss them, then they'll actually oppose. So then that's the problem. So that's why you see karma superior, because it accepts the Veda. Even though it may be a principle of karma, the other ones seem to lean more towards jnana. It doesn't make them higher, because they don't accept all the verses of the Veda.
When you say the philosophies which are purely theistic can be repeated very easily, in contrast to those which are atheistic.
The ones that are theistic.
Theistic means they accept God. or the authority of God or the demigods, something like that. But still they can be very easily defeated. On the other hand, those which do not accept God at all, you know, like Sankhya's, we don't have the concept of God at all. But, and it's, we are just seeing through so many different fathers, you know, and different sutras, just defeating the Sankhya's.
It's not that it's harder, there's less there to, for them to work with. They're actually, the philosophy is easier to defeat because there's less aspects to it. But the persons, because of their nature, then they may not accept. So that's an individual thing. That's the soul. The philosophy is less developed. So it's easier to defeat. But the point is they, you know, may be quite attached. So if they're actually trying to know the supreme absolute truth, but haven't come in contact with it, then coming in contact, they would accept. But those who are attached to it, then it doesn't matter what you say, they still want to be involved. There's no rule that the larger entities must arise from the smaller particles, since even in Arambhavad, this is contradicted by the fact that ether, not one particle, gives rise to sound, and woven cloth arises from long threads. So you can't say that the atoms themselves are the cause of the creation, because it doesn't work like, because you take Akash as a body, gives rise to sound. Not an atom of Akash gives rise to sound. And then all together, then they all sound together. Because then, if they all sound together, then who says when to sound? Right? Who's controlling that? Then there has to be a whole culture there and a head, ether molecule or atom. And then how is that all? So it's ether as a whole. So this whole idea, so it's coming from the big down to the small. It goes the other direction. What we're saying is that, what we're trying to say is, no, it goes from the small and builds up. So that's the difference between the, you know, the, how you say, ascending and descending process. This Adhikarana deals with an additional argument. A footnote, okay. Arambhavad means the doctrine of the origin of the effect. According to Arambhavad, the effect does not exist in its cause prior to its manifestation. No.
You don't
accept. Yeah, because just like, that's why it's pointed out, Rupa Goswami points out that principle of material creation, your creation, maintenance, and destruction, is there in Balaram. It's already there in his personality. But he doesn't manifest it. He expands as Mahanarayan, who expands as then Mahasankarshan, who expands as, you know, Mahavishnu. Then it's manifest. So that's the whole point, is that the effect is already there in the cause. So it's just a matter of when it manifests or not. Just like you have the lump of clay, does that not already include the clay cause? The pot, yeah, it already, because if it didn't have those principles already there, you didn't have the volume, you didn't have the nature, you couldn't get a pot.
Yeah. Can you say that there are many flaws in those theories?
Yes.
But the main ones is that they don't accept that, and this is the second one.
Well, it's all part of not accepting God, because just like the first one is that He is the supreme, you know, because from Him everything is coming.
So that's the main thing.
Yeah. Then they don't understand about how he has many Shaktis. And then they don't understand about Rasa. So they basically don't understand anything about him. He's a little bit. There's the idea of the unlimited aspect and the unchanging aspect. As we mentioned, that's the maximum that can be revealed to someone without devotion. But by the association of the devotee, hearing from the devotee, then they may learn because they're in touch with the chit potency. And by rendering that service through the ear, then they're able to appreciate
because they're in contact with spiritual potency, then they can appreciate beyond. That's what gives them faith. Right? If not, just at least then agyata sukriti, it pushes them forward. But for these various schools, they don't really accept that aspect, because that's the personal is required for that. He's the supreme controller. He's has unlimited energies, and he is rasa. These ones then give all the different aspects, the sambandha, the abhidhamma, and the prayoga. Because if he's not the lord of it, then how is the sambandha established, the relationships? If he's not has unlimited energies, then how is the interaction going? If he's not rasa, how does that happen? So they only understand that part about that they're unlimited and unchanging. That's it. And so then they're trying to make a complete philosophy out of it. And so then you have four major varieties. Well, you say two major varieties. And then they each have their two categories. But they all conclude the ones that are below them. Everyone uses logic. The atomic theory is accepted by them, but they don't put as much emphasis on it. It's more about the elements. So if they push that part too much, the higher philosophy will correct that and lower. So you can see it's all just karma and jnana. It's all I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's what it comes down to. And then you have the varieties within them. It's just like many weeks of assisting a devotee who was originally from I think it's called Saurashtra, no, Kutch in Gujarat. Then I figured out that whatever you're cooking means in the way of vegetables, it's Gujarati because of four things. Right? It has a lot of chili in it, red chili, it's especially powdered. It has sugar in it, right? It has tamarind in it. And it has, coriander. And with that, you could put any vegetable into the pot, and it would come out tasting nice and have that kind of flavor. And the variation would be the nature of the vegetable itself is what flavor it has. But otherwise, you could cook anything that way. And so, for years, that's how you did. And so then with time, then came across other cooks. Then the next cook I bumped into was Bhakti Churuma. Then it's Bengali cooking, and then you could use a variety of it. Like that. Not that they don't use varieties, but it'll be for a special preparation. But this is your generic, just like South Indian, if you have some kind of chili, red chili, some kind of dal, and mustard seeds. You got a chance. Like that. So therefore you have everything like that. But you have that variety. So it'll be specific. But then in Bengali it's what had more that you had a category of how you cook and how you use the spices rather than what spices. It would be within a context. And if you check, these other schools also have that. But you have to go a lot deeper to see it. Someone has to be much more expert. So the same way is that everything is karma and jnana. And then you have the varieties of how their karma, what distinguishes their approach to karma or jnana combination. And that way then you get all the optimists, the pessimists, the people that are kind of in between, and then the varieties of those. Then you get those who worship nature, those who worship demigods, those who worship supreme, and then what aspect of the supreme, what aspect of demigods. It's like this, so you just start breaking it down. So you have the demigod worshippers here that are following the Vedas, but then the Greeks and the Norsemen, they also worship demigods, but then connected to the Vedas. And so then, the stories there are a bit less, wonderful. I'm not sure is that those guys are always like, you had the original demigods, and then they're killed off by their children, the next demigods. And then somehow or another, I want to go to that heavenly place. I mean, and then what? Then maybe because we can go there, we can kill those guys off, and then we can be in charge until the next generation comes up. So if they were smart, they would stop the process of religion down here, and then they could just live there, and then no one would go up there and throw them out of their place. Yeah. Huh? It means these guys. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They do accept God.
Yes, but only that much. So therefore, he's not the supreme controller because karma is supreme. Dharma is supreme. And he's part of the scene. It's just like the guy in the office has to sign the paper. But that's as much use that person is. You respect them, you deal properly, you accept their position, you accept their authority. You know, and there may be ways that you deal, you know, you knock on the door, you close the door after you come in, you wait for them to tell you to sit down and sit properly and don't, you know, put your feet up on the table, you know, stuff like that. You know, so there's an etiquette, so there's a process of worship in Vishnu, and that's accepted, but it's only because it's an anga of karma. So that's the thing. And then the impersonal would be the same thing, just you're dealing with, okay, what's the karma to get yourself removed from karma? You know, what activities that you give up and what you keep so that you can become detached? So to perform karma, you have to be detached. Otherwise, how do you perform pious activities? But you're attached to the result, you know. And so it's a shorter term. While the other one, more emphasis is on renunciation. They're also just as attached. But they deal with less ritualistic aspects. You understand? So it's the same thing. It's that one wants to be God. One wants to be the enjoyer, like that. So that's the whole point. And so then it has those two aspects. I want to control, I want to enjoy. So the karma is more on the control, I mean on the enjoy, but you have to control to enjoy. And the other one is it's more on the control, but the whole point of controlling is so you can enjoy. You understand? So it's the same principle, it's just where you put more of the emphasis. Is that so? This Adhikarana deals with an additional argument. Everything should arise from small particles, raised to oppose the author's proposition that logic is useless in regard to the cause of everything. It is now refuted on grounds of being useless, dry logic. So they're using, again, they're saying, you know, they're worried that logic becomes useless in regard to the cause of everything, because they're coming up with this theory. Then again, using logic. So what they didn't explain, they're trying to explain. But the point is that it's still just dry logic, because you can't understand actually Brahman through dry logic. As well, the Buddhists and others describe the smallest particles differently. Some Vaibhashika Buddhists say that these particles are temporary but actually existing. Others, Yogacara Buddhists, say that the particles are only in the mind, jnana rupa. Others, Mayamika Buddhists, say the particles do not exist at all, shunya rupa. Others, Jains, say the particles are both existing and non-existing. Right? That was the whole thing. They came along. The philosophy was to bewilder the demons. You know, because you can either come in and defeat, or you can just come in and put doubt in everything. You know, this is what you're doing, but maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. You understand? So that's Jain philosophy. So is existing, it's not existing. You know, you say it's there, so in that way it exists to you, but at the same time it's not existing. But then you exist to you, but then the other person, to them it's not a value, so it doesn't exist to them. And so, you know, it's just one of those where you just keep talking and all you do, the taste of bewilderment. It's just a different way of tasting the mode of ignorance, you know, give it some, you know, flair.
Yeah, privatization of Achintaveda Vedatattva.
Yeah. Achintaveda Vedatattva in ignorance. Yeah. Yeah, so that's why they're not, they're considered lower. Asat, sat asat rupa. All of these are opposed to permanent particles. Right? Just the whole idea is that the particles are permanent because they're Krishna's creation. So they're always existing. Now, whether they're manifest or not, that's another thing. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12, 9-11. One may say that varieties arise from the planet Earth itself. However, although the universe may temporarily appear to be the truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The Earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles, but these particles are impermanent. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It is not a fact that the varieties found in this material world simply result from atomic juxtaposition or combination, right, as modern science will try to establish. Since the universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms, and materials are all imagined. Right? Because we say this is small, but you know, someone else says it's big. You know, it's just like come along, someone comes to, you know, has some maha, and they give you some maha, and they give you a small amount. You go, well, that's nothing like that. But you know, how you say 20 ants would say, wow, this is cool. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that it's so because it has no real ultimate existence. So when things are seen in connection with Krishna, that's a real ultimate existence. Therefore, it actually exists. Right? But if it's not seen in that way, then it doesn't exist because how you perceive it is according to your limitations and what you apply on it. And so that's just applied there, and then when you move on, it's back to what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Even if we see this in connection to Krishna, we still find the shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness.
But we're still defining that. Who's defining shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness?
Okay.
Like, is Twiggy skinny or not? But by what standard? Huh? That's funny. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So that's the difficulty, is that everybody has their own opinion. Right? And even if we take from the Vedas and say that this is the opinion of the Vedas, what's the purpose of that? Because it'll be temporary, because the manifestation of that, your interest in that, your involvement in that, they'll all move on. So it doesn't, it's actually therefore then not real. It exists, but it's not real because it doesn't have an actual purpose. So, okay, they're all imagined. They are all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. These differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature, right? So the mechanics is all what's going on here. So that's the thing we have to separate, that it's not the mechanics that's important. It's the ultimate purpose, which is to please Krishna, that's important. Then the mechanics have meaning. But if the mechanics are there without that connection to Krishna, they have no meaning. So it's not that, no, because if we follow the mechanics properly, that will make bhakti better. And no day of the week, no year, nothing. In eternity will that ever be true. Right? It's a bogus philosophy. It's that, no, it's bhakti, it's the opposite. Bhakti makes whatever you're doing. And if you're good at something, great. But it only becomes useful when you connect it to bhakti. But otherwise, it's not that that makes bhakti. Otherwise, bhakti comes from karma. Or, you know, for the intellectuals, bhakti comes from jnana. But it doesn't. It's independent. Therefore, bhakti makes karma and jnana perfect. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. Does that make sense? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth, right? It's all Krishna. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities, right? So then if we say, no, but that's impersonal, like that, then from that point of the negative, that's a material concept. Because in the spiritual world, then the eternality aspect of the Lord, the existence, everything's based on Him. So how is it not Him? Right? It can't exist separately from Him, so it is Him. Right? Action is, He is the energy, so the action is non-different from Him. The result is non-different from Him, because it's the transformation of the self. So He's non-dual. That doesn't mean that the non-dual doesn't have variety, doesn't have personality. So this concept that non-dual means no personality, no existence, none of these, that these are these are Buddhistic concepts. You know, then on a good day you could say impersonal or Brahman concepts. But the point is, unless you see Brahman in connection with Bhagavan, you don't actually understand Brahman. If I see some light and I try to make this whole theory about the light, and I don't know the source of the light, like I only study the sun light, I don't even know that there exists a sun. How much do I actually understand about the light? I can learn many things, but I still won't know very much. Does that make sense? So it's only when I understand this is the effulgence of Krishna, right, and that it's the effulgence of His qualities, then I actually understand Brahman. Then all these things of creation and how Brahman pervades and how it's the basis of everything, it's the cause of all the effect that we see here, then now it makes very you know, straightforward sense. But unless we understand that, then you have to come up with all these other philosophies to try to make it work. So,
now, can we say that this lack of understanding comes from a fear to have a spiritual identity?
Yes, because what's the spiritual identity? The soul. But what you see is they'll accept the soul part. Like, basically, anyone who kind of has philosophy or religion generally accepts the soul. Some don't, you know, if they're too based on the Buddhist or like that. But so what's the real fear?
Being a servant.
That's the thing. I mean, we may say is, okay, I accept that, okay, there's forms and all that, but we're afraid that because forms here give trouble and interaction with forms there will give trouble. But if we get past that, then it comes down to, but then I'm not the controller and enjoyer. So that's why then fear is fear of our relationship with the Lord. Because we don't want to be the servant. We want to be the master. Yeah, so that's the thing.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura ki.